Exciting news from the EAN. Since January 2025, EAN Campus is open to all associate members. If you're part of a National Neurological Society in Europe, you may already have access. Just log in with your MyEAN account at eancampus.org and explore top quality content. More details in the episode description.
Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to EAN Cast, Weekly Neurology. My name is Nina Vashchenko. I'm a neurologist and headache specialist working in the headache clinic in Moscow, Russia. I'm also a liaison officer at the resident and research fellow section. And the month June is dedicated to neurologist well-being. And in today's episode, we will talk about preventing burnout and promoting well-being, individual and institutional strategies. And this podcast has been organized by the Neurologist Well-being Task Force. I have two guests today. They are Paul Boone and Alicia Coroni. Paul Boone is a senior professor of neurology and director of neuroscience at Ghent University in Belgium. He is also chair of the Department of Neurology and chair of the Division of Head Movement and Senses, as well as professor of neuromodulation at Eindhoven University of Technology. Professor Boone is also a past president of the European Academy of Neurology and co-chair of the EAN Brain Health Mission. Dr. Alicia Coroni has recently completed her neurology training and has been working as a neurology consultant at the Geneva Memory Center, Geneva University Hospitals. She currently serves as a past chair of the resident and research fellow section of the European Academy of Neurology. She is also a member of the EAN Education Committee and co-chairs two recently established EAN task forces, Artificial Intelligence in Clinical Neurology and Neurologist Wellbeing Task Force. Welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Nina.
Hi, Nina. Hi, Alicia.
So to start, I would like to ask you both a question. How do each of you define physicians' well-being in your daily professional lives?
Well, that's a very good question. Actually, when I talk to residents, and I talk to them very often as the local program director for the residency program, the question, the most significant and at the same time very simple question is, any morning, do you enjoy, are you looking forward to coming to the department? Is the fact that you plan to come to your work site, is this a joyful thought? Is this gratifying in advance? I think this is, it's a simple question. And if you ask the question, it's also pretty straightforward when the resident answers. Typically, it is a yes, but it may as well be, well, not so much or not always. But I believe this is a relevant question.
I totally agree with Professor Boone. And I think to me, professional well-being means has different shades, different layers. So you have the emotional layer, the physical layer. And to me, one of the important things is feeling seen in the institution where I work, seen by my colleague, and being able to contribute meaningfully to the community, to the care of patients. So on one side, feeling supported, but at the same time, having the chance to change things that maybe do not work properly and trying to contribute all together to a thriving community in the end. Thriving community on the healthcare workforce, but also a general community for our patients and for the general population.
I agree with both of you. Thank you very much. And we're going to go to the individual strategies for this well-being. So Alicia, as a former residents, just finishing neurology residency, what individual strategies have helped you the most in managing stress and avoiding burnout during your training?
So I would say that during my training, I received a lot in the sense that at the individual level, I was very lucky to have the support of friends and peers who really helped creating a stigma-free space where I could feel seen and supported during difficult times that can happen in your life and during training. And I have to say that generally, these kind of spaces have been limited at the institutional level, but things are changing. We've seen progress. And I think this is also thanks to initiatives like the Neurologist Wellbeing Task Force, which has been strongly supported by the EAN board, by Professor Boone, Professor Morrow. So we're changing things and we're trying to help bring mental health and well-being at the forefront of our professional culture and helping maybe suggesting some individual measures. At the personal level, from my side, I tried really to prioritize self-care through rest, regular physical activity whenever possible. And to me, I really like art. So being exposed to that represents really a small but meaningful way to recharge. And I think everybody can find the best combination of activity or rest to do that. What I also try to do, which sometimes can be quite challenging, is to set boundaries around working hours. And I know that this is not always the case. It hasn't been the case for me and for most of us. And I think I also have been quite fortunate to find mentors, both junior and senior, within and outside my institutions, who really guided me and supported me in difficult times. And also, I think that I feel like I want to give back. So another individual measure that I have is also caring for others. So considering the health of my mental health and physical health of my fellow residents, colleagues, and even senior staffs. And I think starting to talk openly about this is also a first individual measure to change a culture and build a culture where we can actually thrive and not just survive through residency and through our experience as a neurologist.
Helping yourself by helping others sounds very beautiful. I like that. And have you heard probably about mindfulness and resilience training? They're often recommended for well-being. Do this work for you? Have you tried that?
So I try to do mindfulness and meditation. And I found them both of them very helpful. However, I think that mindfulness, as you mentioned, also resilience training can be helpful, but unfortunately in isolation, they often feel like placing a little bit the burden on the individual rather than addressing other systemic stressors and risks that can play a role. And the challenge is that on one side, these tools are very helpful as coping mechanisms, but they do not prevent burnout if the environment remains unsupportive and sometimes can also be toxic. So we really need a combination of personal tools and structural support. So both must work together. And as part of our work at the Neurologist Wellbeing Task Force, we are conducting a systematic reviews on studies that have assessed measures to prevent burnout and to manage burnout in healthcare professionals and especially in trainees. And we, in our experience, in our search, we saw that most of the studies were considering individual measures, forgetting that there is also an institutional and structural part that needs to be addressed if we want to really face burnout, prevent burnout, and find adequate measures.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to talk about institutional responsibilities in a few minutes also. Professor Boone, from your experience mentoring trainees and clinicians, what individual level interventions have shown the strongest evidence in improving their well-being?
Well, very good question. I think this is a multi-layer thing, really. First, maybe, and let's talk about individual choices and individual preferences. I think before a resident starts, I think it needs to be very clear to that individual what a neurology residency means. It is clearly not a walk in the park. I cannot stress that. And I also stress in the initial interview how important resilience and very different, and this again may be very, very different among different people. We are all very different individuals, and that obviously, as we know that as neurologists, it is the way our brain is wired that makes us the person we are. That being said, even, and I think there I'm completely with Alice, even the most resilient person is not free of a risk of going into a burnout situation. So that is where I think personal measures are important. Notwithstanding the huge responsibility that lies with the mentors and the institutions, but as you said, we may come back to that in a minute. What I honestly believe is that the any person, and in particular a resident, needs to feel respected at all times, needs to feel being an owner of an issue, of a problem, needs to be responsible. And at the same time, with responsibility comes obviously, respect. I think the environment, the safety, the fact that there is a trustworthy environment, that the space, as Alice called it, is permitting all this. I believe that these are key elements in preventing burnout with residents. There's certainly a couple of institutional things that can be done, but maybe we can discuss later. So in brief, common sense in the way you as a person, as a resident, you interact with all the challenges that you are facing. Honestly, what I think, and this is what drives me as a mentor, is that I have not forgotten my own time when I was a resident. And I have gone through difficult moments for sure. I could explain you in great detail, because this is really embedded in my hippocampus. I will never forget some of the personal difficulties that I had. And I mean, this is why I also show quite a bit of empathy towards what different people face when they are facing the same challenges. The difference in individuals is also a key thing. What may be preventive to burnout in one person may have, as a matter of fact, not the same effect, or even an opposite effect in another person. So I believe in this very personal approach, both from the resident's point of view: how do I, and what is my common sense dictating me in what I should do or should not do, and the other way around. I think this personal approach is also in place, or is also indicated in the relationship between the mentor and the mentee.
I agree also with both of you what you said. And Professor Boone, how could we say young doctors be encouraged to take mental and physical self-care seriously? How do you encourage your residents and colleagues?
Well, Alice already said made a couple of suggestions, right? I mean, the reasonable limitation of working time is prime. Obviously, I mean, if you're completely overtired, you haven't slept, I mean, you simply don't function well, and that's a risk both for the resident and the patient and the department. So that, I mean, that is really, I mean, it's not a matter of law or regulation. It's a matter of common sense. So, I mean, a well-rested resident, a well-rested doctor in general, functions much better than an ill-rested person, for sure. The other thing is promote hobbies. Don't function in such a way that this neurology training is your entire life and there is nothing left. I mean, the key question that I ask, the second most important question, apart from motivation for neurology, that I ask incoming residents, I ask about their hobbies. I asked about how they think they will spend their free time when they are working in our department. So I believe, and again, it may be very different. Some person will tell me, well, listen, for me, this yoga club on Thursday evening is vital. I don't take calls on Thursday evening. Fine. I cannot, for one reason or another, take calls that particular weekend. Completely fine. So it is, again, very different. And I think our challenge as mentors is that we, again, to a reasonable degree, take into account all these different, well, personal requirements, and make it work on a group level, obviously on a department level. You cannot take into account every individual wish. But I think if a resident feels, and in a way this is all about respect. This is about recognizing the fact that the resident is not only a mentee, but is like a full size person, is an individual doctor who has own responsibilities. If you ask questions to people who got into burnout, at least that is my experience, one of the most frequently heard questions or complaints is, at a certain moment, I lost the feeling of ownership. It was like I was not controlling the cases that I was supposed to control. I couldn't take it anymore. It was just too much, and I felt not able and not apt to do this. So these are a couple of things. There's much more to discuss, by the way, but let me finish here.
Thank you very much. And as you already mentioned, social support seems very important for the clinicians. And what do you think, how can physicians foster stronger peer networks to buffer against stress and isolation? Alice, would you like to answer first?
Yeah, I think as we talking about different measures for burnout, it's the same for creating social support. So there is an individual and an institutional structural level, organizational level. So individual neurologists or trainees can take simple but very important steps like regularly checking in with colleagues or even organizing informal peer support groups, going out together sometimes to discuss about the struggles that we have at work, or even setting aside few minutes during meetings to ask how people are really doing. And then, as we mentioned, at the institutional structured level, as Professor Boone was mentioning, having individualized mentorship support. So having mentors who consider you as an individual, as a person with other interests outside from neurology, which are very important, regular well-being check-ins, and also trying to create really a safe space where individuals can share experiences, normalize stress, and also this can help creating a sense of community, as we said, is quite important. So the other important thing is that these initiatives should be accessible and effect and to be effective. So I think we need to all contribute to that at the individual and institutional levels, as we're saying.
Professor Boone, would you like to add something?
Well, I'm just thinking of some of the action points that have not been discussed yet. One of the things on an institutional level that I find particularly interesting and useful is that every resident from the first day on in the department is being assigned a personal mentor who is not directly responsible for the education, but is like the person of trust, like an ombudsperson, to which the resident can always go without fear of having to talk to the chair of the department or the residency program director. So this is typically an other member of the staff who is a neurologist, a staff member in neurology, so knowledgeable about the actual situation and the field, but has no hierarchical relationship with the resident. So we have this established system of personal mentors, and we give, by the way, it's not assigned, we give a few profiles to the resident, and then she or he can choose one of the few people that is being recommended. So they still have a choice, and if that doesn't work out, they can still go for another person. So there is like, try to organize this in a maximal way. Secondly, what I find incredibly important is, and I think Alice already mentioned that or touched up on this briefly, but let me elaborate a bit further. As part of the evaluation of the resident, we should not only look at the progress in knowledge on anatomy or physiology or clinical semiology or technical skills, but definitely also ask quality of life related questions that are relevant to the well-being of the resident, and that should be taken into account. And if there is an issue, this should be internally relayed. And when there really are alarm signals, this should be taken very seriously. Last but not least, something that I really wanted to add is that, at least in the departments that I have been responsible for, and I know this is happening more and more throughout European departments, is that the residents should have a democratic say in how the department is run. I mean, if I look just at my department, which is a mid-sized department, more than half of the doctors who see patients are residents. It is only normal that an elected representative of the residents is part of like a daily of the bureau of the department, where, let's say, decisions on how things are being organized in the department should be also voiced and discussed with the residents as a group and with their elected representatives. So this is all in an attempt I believe, and I think on a cognitive basis, but also on an emotional basis, this is important, that the residents feel that they are a significant part of the organization and that they really have a say in the important issues that are, or the important decisions that are being made during the on how the department is run. So a formal representation of residents in the decision making of a department, I believe, is also an important institutional measure.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Professor Boone. So we've already moved to institutional responsibilities, and you mentioned some organizational changes that could help to reduce burnout and also what leadership could do for the clinicians that work in a hospital. And now I have a question to Alice, more from the resident's perspective. Where do you see institutions, let's say, not failing, but maybe cannot support residents' mental health on the level that they should do?
Yeah, I think some of the points have already been touched upon by Professor Boone. So one of the main important causes of institution failing is when they do not see that they haven't addressed the root causes of burnout, which can be excessive workloads, inadequate staffing, inflexible scheduling, and as Professor Boone said, also giving recognition. So enabling a resident or even senior neurologists to participate directly in the organization of scheduling, for example, or in reorganizing workloads. So giving them space to collaborate to create a more sustainable environment. I also think that there is also a problem around persistent stigma around healthcare workers' mental health. And I feel that many residents, but also senior colleagues, still fear professional consequences for speaking openly about their mental health. And as Professor Boone said, having the person who is responsible for your educational evolution and growth, being also the person who's looking after your mental health, can be sometimes very difficult, and this type of hierarchical situation positions can create difficulties for junior colleagues to share how they're feeling and whether they are struggling with mental health issues. And I think there is also in some environments and institutions, likely it's not all the institutions, and the culture is changing, but there is even an unspoken culture that treats burnout or mental health challenges as an integral part of specialty training. It's just a step that we need to go through. And this is, we really need to change this mindset, because this is not only harmful, it's actually unsustainable, as we were saying. I mean, if, as Professor Boone was saying, if you want to care for our patients with empathy and appropriately, we need to be ourselves to be well, to have slept enough, to have done some physical exercise, to be flourishing in our hobbies. And we need to see really like the prevention of burnout and mental health disorders as an essential and not optional part of the institution's strategic agenda. So it's always at different levels that we can work on that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also, to start working with the problem, you first need to acknowledge the problem, which doesn't happen sometimes in some departments. I would like to ask you a few more questions, both of you. So the first one would be, if you could implement only one change tomorrow, either or on individual or on institutional level, to improve well-being for healthcare workers, what would it be? Something that you maybe still don't have in your departments and your clinic?
I would. Well, we have plenty of staff meetings, you know, where we discuss patients. We have scientific meetings. We have continuous medical education meetings, not only for the residents, but also for staff and external neurologists. We have congresses, both national and international. So plenty of meetings and plenty of social interactions. What I would add to that in a sensible way would be like a formal intervention where you get the residents together. And you can discuss about the format, whether or not there should be a senior staff present or not, or only junior staff or no staff at all. But having, and I've been working in two countries, and in one of the countries this was already working and I saw it working. In the other country it is not it is not yet established. But these sessions where people really on equal basis can discuss about their personal feelings about what they have done or what they should do and what they have done in a past or historic case or what they should do in an imaginary or kind of a presented case. I think this is really important, and it would be a more organized way of reflecting among residents about their own functioning in the broad sense of the way. So not typically medical functioning, because this is addressed in case meetings and medical meetings, but more like how did you approach this? How did you feel about this case? In some formats, morbidity and mortality conferences come close in the sense that these meetings are then obviously directed towards cases in which things went wrong. I would see these intervention sessions more like, you know, general, not linked to particular case, but to general cases. And it could be imaginary cases or real cases that have been seen in the past, where the focus of the discussion would be, how did I as a resident, as an individual person, react or feel about what has been done, and what could I have done better, or what could I have done otherwise? Things that this is a format that presently I have not seen in many places, and I think it's very useful.
Alicia, what change would you implement tomorrow if you could?
Yeah, I think I agree with Professor Boon to have really the time dedicated to really have stigma-free mental health conversations that includes, as we mentioned, how individuals can improve the situation, can prevent burnout from developing, and how at the same time mentors, institutions can support them in this. And I think on the long term, we need to really change a little bit the culture. I mean, a little bit change significantly in some cases the culture around health worker mental health. And as we're doing with neurology, where we're shifting the focus from solely treating diseases to actively preventing neurological conditions and related disability at the primary, secondary, tertiary levels, we should do the same thing for mental health, for healthcare workers. So not only preventing burnout with individual and structural measures, but also trying to help people who are going through burnout or other mental health problems and struggle to feel supported and to face these issues. And the tertiary level to then reintroduce people who have suffered from mental health problems and burnout related to the workplace to be reintegrated into the working life in an appropriate, safe and sustainable way.
Maybe can I just add, by listening to what Alicia said, I forgot to mention, but I think what is also really, from an institutional point, really very important is that when residents report issues, so when there is an issue and it is being reported, that the result of this reporting is reported back. So because nothing is more frustrating than being able to complain, but afterwards never see any results of your complaint. And I mean, that result can be either positive or negative, the way you want to look at it, but at least feedback should be given about what is actually being done with a complaint that is filed. I think that is also a crucial one.
And I think that we need more leaders like Professor Boon, was like opening, engaging and visibly engaging in conversations about well-being and about preventing burnout and managing burnout. So I think we need more open leadership who's visibly not only speaking but also acting on this and feeding back directions to trainees, but also to senior colleagues who equally are asked to face a demanding job, both at the scheduling point of view, from the scheduling point of view, but also from the emotional point of view.
Yeah, I agree with both your ideas. I think they sound very nice. And coming to an end to the podcast, I would like, again, both of you to give brief advice to physicians and leaders in neurology who are listening to us right now, want to take the first step toward improving well-being in their teams. What would you recommend, Professor Boon?
Well, I would say be yourself, be aware of who you are, take into account take your own limitations seriously, act accordingly, never accept the unacceptable, and just use common sense. And this is, I mean, it may sound like a very general statement, but I honestly believe very much in common sense. What looks unacceptable, what is thought of others as being unacceptable, usually is unacceptable.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the most important step is usually, this is how I try to think when I try to find solutions, is to begin with what's within your control. So as Professor Boone was saying, know yourself, start with your own action, start small, try to stay consistent, so prioritize your own well-being. So by doing so, you're not only taking care of yourself, but you're also sending a powerful message that encourages others to do the same. And first steps can be as easy, as simple as like checking in with our colleagues, creating a space for open and supportive conversations. And if you feel ready at the individual level and feel supported by the institution, then take it further by challenging the unspoken culture that equates exhaustion with dedication. And by collaborating with institutions, we can really drive sustainable and meaningful changes for our community. And in the end, we can all contribute to a thriving community and be of passionate neurologists. So there is some way to go, but I think we're all on the same boat.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for coming to this podcast today. I'll just remind that we had two wonderful guests, Professor Paul Boone and Dr. Licia Caroni. I'm Nina Vashenko as a moderator of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening to us today.
Thank you, Nina. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Nina. Bye.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.